Welcome to the Blockchain DNA Podcast. This show brings you the latest in blockchain technology and global developments in business and fintech. Presented by Metaverse DNA.
Hi, I'm Alex Lightman. I'm the CEO of Kimoji. And welcome to the Lightman Report. This week, we're going to talk about DeFi. We're going to offer new perspectives on DeFi, and we're going to say where things are. DeFi is an acronym for decentralized finance, which refers to a technology set that aims to replicate and innovate on current financial service models and products using decentralized blockchain technology. These financial services range from digital assets that may or may not represent assets in the real world, to financial smart contracts that can replicate derivative products found in traditional finance markets. So 2020 is a new challenge for decentralized finance. Every financial crisis is both a challenge and an opportunity for crypto and blockchain. Modern fiat monetary systems and banks are under pressure because of COVID-19, because of the massive supply chain disruption and the massive demand and supply and financial markets shocks. And decentralized finance has a chance to take leadership, not in the size of the market, because the gross global product is $80 trillion, but it can grow, it can be growing faster, and growth opportunities have their own rewards. So here's a state of the market. These are contracts locked up in Ethereum that we'll be talking about in a second. Maker is for lending $391 million worth of Ethereum. Synthetics, derivatives, Compound is lending. Uniswap is decentralized exchanges. Aave is lending. Instadap is lending. DYDX is lending. That's, by the way, reference a calculus and differential equation reference. Set protocol are assets. Bancor is distributed exchanges or decentralized exchanges. WBTC assets. So these are the big 10 big DeFi pulse categories. The DeFi isn't a one-trick pony. It's actually 12-trick ponies. It's payments. We have representative companies there. Stablecoins, infrastructure, investment, exchanges, including decentralized exchanges, derivatives, know your customer, which is a legal requirement, prediction markets, wallets, other kinds of marketplaces, lending and credit, and insurance. We'll talk about some of these as we go through this. Here are top companies, top DeFi companies and use cases in 2020. And we let the 100 flowers bloom, let the 100 flow. The main four use cases of DeFi are trust source in crises, banking crises, hyperinflation, currency crisis, or unexpected devaluations. You want something that doesn't correlate with the regular markets. Also, something that can tackle global inefficiencies, such as the 2 billion out of 8 billion people who are unbanked, expensive cross-border services like remittances. Sometimes remittances can cost over 10% of the money being sent from the United States to other countries, sanctions, and bypass local bans. And then my head, which I'm starting to figure out how to use, is blocking empower creativity, banking, derivatives, indices. And of course, you have as other, the Ethereum's decentralized payment, payments, and you have custodial services, infrastructure, exchanges and liquidity, investing, marketplaces, derivatives, KYC and identity. Identity is super important. It's the core of all the other things. Stable coins, prediction markets, insurance, credit and lending. So we talked about that but just a second ago, but there's not just those top four, but notice that there are companies within each category. And I hope that if you're interested in this sector, that you can take a screenshot or take a picture of those companies and look them up and see what their offerings are. What are the user motivations and the pain points? Well, Consensus Research, and Consensus, of course, is the biggest company doing development around Ethereum for ever since the beginning of when Ethereum came out. The leading motivator for using decentralized products and services was to increase crypto portfolios and earn more crypto rather than dollar-denominated monetary values. There are people who want to earn more in crypto. And Bitcoin in the 2020s, so from January 1st, 2020 to December 31st, 2019, Bitcoin had the highest return on investment of anything in the decade, more than 9,000,000%. And there also is a desire to remain first movers and be part of emergent technology and ecosystems. A lot of the participants who were surveyed said that they had used DeFi protocols within the last 6 months as a mean to earn passive income. So somebody might have Ethereum in a portfolio and they can lend it to somebody else and earn money on that. And they can earn it in fiat or they can earn it in more crypto. And they also want to experiment. People want to try things out. You have the crypto community is the in the Stanford values and lifestyles curve. There's the innovators, that first 1%, and the early adopters, that 2%. And then there's the chasm before you get to the early majority. But the crypto people are squarely in innovators and early adopters. All the people that were interviewed discussed the importance of decentralization. A lot of people are big fans of decentralization in our community, and also talked about benefits of decentralization. And one of the big promises of this is passive income from these lending protocols that we just talked about a minute ago, such as Compound, Fulcrum, DYDX, and more. Participants are searching for a mechanism to earn passively from their crypto portfolio. What are their pain points? Well, they don't know how to make the most of their money. How do you make the most money on your crypto? They also are constantly having a new protocol to check out. Even within Ethereum, you have the new kinds of standards that are coming out and the new releases. There's keeping on top of price volatility, though now even oil itself is very volatile. On the day that we made this, oil crashed. The futures contracts crash into negative territory for the first time. So the big argument against crypto is it has no intrinsic value. Well, if oil futures contracts go negative, what's the intrinsic value of oil? We now have that question for the first time. Also, keeping on top of the best earnings and borrowing rates, how do you do that? Fees associated with moving coins around, though that's much less of a problem for crypto people going wallet to wallet than it is when you have to go through an intermediary. Also having to give up too much of their information to sign up. Some people don't like that. And a fiat on-ramp. I have to move my coins several times to earn interest. Those are the complaints. I think that they're all being dealt with. Part of the issue here is seeking trust in trustlessness. So you want to have all these different components that are kind of analogs to what people are used to if they're managing money, holding on to money, banking in fiat. So participants perceive trust in different forms and draw from a selection of trust attributes to determine what protocol they're going to put their money into. All the participants in these surveys identify that they must fundamentally believe in the viability of the crypto ecosystem, the technology, all of the redemptions, everything about it, in order to use it. Though they have to believe in it to varying degrees, expressed in their short-term or long-term view. Seeking trust in a technology that embodies trustlessness is challenging, because the idea is that you don't want to have to trust humans, but ultimately it comes down to trusting the people who are also in that community. The decentralized finance isn't only around Ethereum, though Ethereum was set up for smart contracts, so there are a lot of things that are just there philosophically and technologically that are made for decentralized finance. The first Bitcoin Digital Autonomous Organization, or DAO, launched in December of 2019 in Uruguay. Money on Chain launched a DeFi platform based on the Bitcoin sidechain Rootstock. And this is the first Bitcoin DeFi, and it's a very important fact for DeFi adoption in crypto, because Bitcoin, you have basically Bitcoin dominance. So it's somewhere at any given moment around two-thirds. It's been there historically. And if you look at all Bitcoin Cash, gold, platinum, all the different kinds of Bitcoin, it's as much as 92% of the crypto market. And most of the rest is Ethereum and XRP, a few others. And so it's great for DeFi if Bitcoin is being used as well. There are big numbers. These are big numbers from a crypto perspective, not from a Wall Street perspective. But February of 2020 was a decent time. The ETH price was more than $200. And the value locked in crypto DeFi, we saw that slide before in the state of the market. So if you add all those up together, it, for the first time, it reached $1 billion locked up of ETH. And Colin Myers, the global DeFi product strategy lead for Codify, said, the foundations of new economies start with borrowing and lending. And in 2019, the blockchain industry enabled these necessary primitives in what's become DeFi. Ethereum is volatile. Ethereum dropped on the 12th of March from $195 to $110, a 44% drop. I unfortunately sold near the bottom there. True story, trying to get money together to stock up for the COVID-19 possible supply chain disruptions. And the accumulated users activity on 12th March for six financial dApps, MakerDAO, Uniswap, Compound, Cyber, DYDX, 1inch was up 84% compared to the average for the previous 30 days because people were trying to make sense of all these big markets. And also, it should be pointed out that on the 10th of March, I don't have it on the slide, but I'll just tell you that this was the largest drop of this millennium, the largest drop in the last 20 years. The Dow dropped 9.99%, as we've said in a previous Lightman report. The Ethereum network was overloaded, showing the limits of its scalability, and the total amount of DeFi assets fell to 500 million. It's back up, though. It's popped back up to about 700 million. We've also had big hacks. This is unfortunate because the Bitcoin blockchain has been rolled back three times, but nobody got away with big amounts of money. And a Uniswap-based pool was hacked. Criminals gained more than 300,000 worth of Ethereum and an Ethereum-based tokenized version of Bitcoin, IMBTC. The DeFi protocol lendef.me was also hacked, and 25 million worth of Ethereum, also Tether's USDT and other leading tokens were gone. Now, what's amazing is the attacker has since returned all the stolen funds. It happened just before we recorded this. And some people believe that's due to there was a poor hacking practice that left his identity exposed. And clearly, DeFi needs better security standards. I agree. I've been SIM swapped. I've lost quite a bit of mine as well. Still haven't recovered at all. Though I did get restitution due to the Department of Homeland Security. The person at AT&T who sold my social security number gave restitution, and I thought it would be some big thing, and it was $33. So I have no idea why government is in time and effort for years is involved in coming back with a $33 redemption. And basically, this was done on a simple attack vector on ERC-777 with arbitrary code execution during the transfer to steal the money. And actually, the vulnerability was described by consensus 16 months ago. So we have to tighten up our act to make all this work. And then finally, last thing we're going to cover in this Lightman report is the concept of decentralized finance insurance. And though this is supposed to be risk-free, nothing related to computers is risk-free. Users have experienced loss of their crypto fund through exchange hacks, private keys being compromised, and also mishandling crypto funds. Since the transaction nature is decentralized fund recovery and the user security is problematic, unlike banks or credit cards in traditional finance, you basically don't have someone you can just call. Who are you going to call? You can't call the bank support department in general. So DeFi insurance holds a vital role in securing the funds of the user, and you can bring more users into the DeFi space. DeFi insurance protocols allow the users to take out insurance policies on smart contracts and funds or any other digital asset through pooling individual funds to cover any claims. And this is a tiny, tiny space. It's just beginning, but the market is untapped. It's what's called blue ocean as opposed to red ocean. You're not killing each other for different margins. You're not competing with Warren Buffett's Geico or other things. And as the need grows and as more people get into crypto and as more people who are in crypto want to earn money on their money, then more the compound interest, what Rothschild, Baron von Rothschild said was the eighth wonder of the world. You want to have compound interest plus crypto, the ninth wonder of the world. So more insurance applications are going to do that. So this is the Lightman Report on decentralized finance. Thank you, and I'll see you soon.
Like what you hear so far? Make sure you never miss a show by clicking the subscribe button now. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Now, back to the show.
Welcome to you both. Eric Yu, CEO of Metaverse DNA. Alex Lightman, futurist, writer. Alex, I really want to talk about your latest Lightman report on decentralized finance, or DeFi as it's called in the Walk of Life. You talked about 12 areas of DeFi, basically. Now, I know that we heard that COVID-19 boosted all these developments. Which of those areas do you think are going to be the first growth areas for blockchain and crypto environments? If we look specifically at these 12.
Sure. I think the first one is payments, because of fast peer-to-peer trustless transactions, people will want that. And we're told not to use cash because money is infected with COVID-19. And so people are going to also, when you have half the world on lockdown, including probably people who account for 70-80% of the world's GDP, they're not handing money over, so they're using online apps. So this is the perfect time for crypto to come to the rescue and help people with their payments. And I've seen people do their summaries of their payments, how much they're spending, and anything that can reduce the fees out there. Payday loans are 780% or so. A second thing is lending, because these payday loans of 780%, I mean, we should be loaning our crypto out to each other. We in the crypto industry, if it's just you have crypto sitting there, don't have it just be dead crypto, have it be loaned out to people. Also, we want decentralized exchange because of the reliability and the independence and the speed. And we don't want people front running. You don't want people to see your orders, then buy before you buy or sell before you sell. And we can get out of that with decentralized exchanges. I don't think there's front. I've never heard of front running from a decentralized exchange. And then finally, digital identity. We need that because we're all now anonymous to each other. We're not looking in each other's eyes. We're not appearing on cameras. We need really good digital identity. So those are the four areas I would choose.
Yeah. Eric, if we look at your latest developments for Metaverse DNA, how do you see that Metaverse DNA can cover these areas of things like digital identity, like peer-to-peer lending, like transactions and payments? I thought there was a vital point in Alex, what you just said, about just being ahead of the market. We all know that stock exchanges in the traditional space take advantage of all, I would say, ordinary people like you and me with big computers to just go ahead, and fix the trade and to their advantage, basically. So how do you see the role of Metaverse DNA in these developments?
It's interesting that what Alex mentioned was almost exactly what I thought. It's very important. Because if you look at the roadmap of DNA, we actually designed a decentralized exchange into the DNA main chain. So the decentralized exchange will come with DNA. So it's like inbuilt. And it's not only a decentralized exchange, it also has the lending capacity. So you can lend your crypto out. But in terms of payment, I think I'm a little slightly different from Alex. Probably Alex think the same way, but I think you probably shouldn't use Bitcoin as the payment method. Because I really think Bitcoin or Ethereum or a DNA or a ETP should be just crypto assets, right? So you don't go out buy a coffee with gold. I think Bitcoin is more like gold. So when we say payment, like electronic payment, I think more important stable coin. And actually, stable coin probably will be going along with the lending facility. So the borrowing and lending on the market, decentralized exchange, it's actually combined together very tight knit. So I think it's actually pretty excited to wait DNA to go online.
If you look at what you just said about, stablecoin taking a primary role in, I would say, basically borrowing, lending, are you then saying that actually assets like cryptocurrency should be a collateral to these stable coins? Or how do you see a stable coin in a decentralized sense?
Well, to me, crypto assets like Bitcoin are assets. So I think any assets can be collateral. And mm-hmm. since we're on blockchain already, So why don't we just use, I call it native blockchain assets like Bitcoin or Ether, like DNA, to you as the collateral, right? So I think USDT kind of using that methodology, but they're centralized. And so when you are centralized, then a lot of bad thing can happen. So if we have a decentralized way of collateralize the digital asset and make them make the stable coin out of the collateralized the crypto assets, will be beautifully designed.
Well, I think it will be a paradigm, a massive change in the way that we look towards borrowing and lending in the traditional sense of the world, even in mortgaging. And you know, people don't get, in the traditional way, they don't get any interest more in their savings. So there will be people looking for other opportunities that will sort of come together now with all the new developments that we see. A lot of things come now together, creating a whole new era, basically. There's, on the one hand, you don't get anything on your savings. You know, you have to pay even in Europe to have your savings in a bank account. On the other side, people want more freedom, more security. They want to know who they're dealing with. They want to get out of these centralized grips where they feel powerless, basically. So a lot of these things come together. So I think the next month, even the next 2 years, will be an exciting time and a whole new development going on. So Alex, I know it's hard to predict stuff. We don't do that these days anymore after we had the whole COVID-19 situation. I know it's your job to look forward as a futurist. But if we're talking economic numbers, okay, we still have the crypto space as, I would say, a minor drop in the ocean of worldwide GDP. So if you look at these developments, what's your prediction as to the amount of the economic picture it will take, let's say, in the next 2 to 5 years? What do you think in numbers? What will it do?
Sure. Well, CoinMarketCap says that the market cap of all crypto today, and remember, there are now 5,700 cryptocurrency coins, tokens, is $247 billion. And we've done $159 billion in volume. I think it's pretty safe to predict that by the end of the year, that the market cap will be over $500 billion, and that within 4 years, it'll be over $1 trillion, which would mean new highs. So the peak crypto total market value was about $800 billion. That was at the peak 2 years ago. Or so, when Bitcoin was, the Kuwaitis were grabbing the Bitcoin futures at 25,000 for a Bitcoin, and they overreached. I think that in the Lightman report, I refer to a milestone, a big milestone of $1 billion worth of Ethereum in contracts that's all locked up for DeFi applications, primarily lending. I think that it took us 11 years to get there. I think it'll take us 11 months to double that, to get to the next billion. We might even see it go to 11 weeks, because we're going to have people being afraid of hyperinflation of digital currencies, because you have this dollar liquidity crisis, and then you have just Congress, every time they're meeting, they're arguing right now over trillions of dollars. And I worked for the U.S. Senate. And I remember when we thought it was such a big joke to say Everett Dirksen, who has a building named after him in Capitol Hill, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. Now that sounds like chump change. A trillion here, a trillion there, pretty soon you're talking about hyperinflation. And when you hear the words hyperinflation, your brain should go, I got to go into crypto, because crypto doesn't have unknowns like fiat does. You, in general, will know the supply, you know the emission rate, or you know the background of the entrepreneurs, you know something that makes it more controllable. So I can just see a lot of people taking even a tiny fraction of their assets and putting it in crypto, but even a tiny fraction of the 380 trillion worth of assets in the world are going to plump up that 249 billion number of crypto.
We could have an interview at the end of the year to see if we make that 500. I mean, it will be a very interesting development. Because
do I get a prize?
We can discuss that. No, I was I was referring to situations in countries with hyperinflation due to the local economic circumstances, and you saw that the price of Bitcoin was substantially higher than in other regions of the world to actually get it for the local currency. Because by the time that they bought it for the local currency, the guy that's selling the Bitcoin, you know, was already taking a loss, basically.
We saw the like they call it in Korea, when crypto was trading for more in Korea than outside, the kimchi premium. And now we have what I guess we call the falafel premium, because Bitcoin in Lebanon, as Lebanon's pound is collapsing, it's almost double last time I looked.
I think we've seen some countries in South America with the same effects. It's not good. I mean, the local circumstances invite that. And, you know, that's always the situation with hyperinflation. Nobody's happy about that.
I think it's not too hard to predict things. Let me make a bold prediction as well.
Okay.
I think within 2 years after this COVID-19 situation, at least one country's currency will fail. I think the number can go as high as 10.
I think you're right, because we saw an example in South America we all know about, where a complete currency actually failed and it took them 10 years to recover from that. And they're, you know, looking at another disaster right now. If we look at a completely different angle of cryptocurrency and blockchain development, in the past it has shown that it's the gaming industry that has become big because they like the peer-to-peer activity. Eric, now, if you see, is it going to be more accessible in a decentralized situation? How do you see this peer-to-peer playing, this whole thing in the gaming industry?
It's interesting that I heard so many things about gaming industry these days. I don't know if you guys follow the news that CNN Anderson Cooper interviewed the mayor of Las Vegas, that these two are actually arguing about, you know, should they open Las Vegas like early, right? The Cooper says, no, you can't do that, right? The mayor says, no, everybody losing their job, you know, we need to reopen casino, everything. But, you know, I mean, they're both right, and I think they're both wrong. So the mayor of Las Vegas, they want to open casino. But local people, they don't really play in the casino. You need people from other state of U.S. to come in to play. There's nobody coming.
They can fly.
What's the point of opening the casino when you have all the other state locked down, right? And the other news I heard was Macau. The month of April, they lost 96% of their business. So year over year, 96% of the business. Actually, the funny thing was, I had a lot of friends there actually in Macau. They've been doing online gaming like 2 years ago, and they're seeing a huge upward surge in terms of online gaming. And they say, hey, Eric, can I put my business onto your DNA chain? I said, yes, technically. Will I endorse that? No, but since it's decentralized, I can't really say no to you. So do whatever. Now, guess what? There's a project actually created their online gaming project on top of my ETP chain. And last month.
What's it called?
It's called Apollo.
Okay.
Apollo. And interestingly, it's I think that they approved by SEC. It's what do you call this? It's a STO, secure token. They have their approval from SEC. I was like, wow, this is something. I said, if you want to put on ETP chain and later on move to DNA chain, by all means. It's decentralized, not my call.
So actually, I think this is quite a premiere. We didn't know about that. So the game's called Apollo, and
no, the project called Apollo, and I don't even know their casino name. Actually, I'll find out later.
We should be doing a release on that one, Eric, and tell.
You're
going to have a game on the decentralized system. I think it's the advantages that of decentralized, you know, people can have their own decentralized gaming going. And if it's SEC approved, it will be able to do it with things that are considered currencies, no matter the text or whatever form. Yeah. So a major step, if you are able to get them online, we should do a bit of marketing on that one. That's an awesome.
Well, you know what they collateralized as the casinos in Vietnam and Myanmar and South Korea. So they use the physical land and the casino, the building on top of it to collateralize the project. I was like, okay, sure.
That's good. It's got something backing it up in hard, actually tangible assets, which, is a different situation. So what they actually did is they tokenized the building, they tokenized the land, and with that token, they started the game. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, it is. It is.
That's great. It's different than when you create just a token to play with and there is no value behind it.
Well, that's why they call themselves STO, right? Secure token offering.
We have to do a press release on that one and have a closer look at it to see what it's like, because on decentralized, there's not much going. The main players in the market are centralized with licensing in countries like Malta and Curacao and other countries, which is basically a traditional casino, but then online, and it's a very big market. So, it's the first start, centralized gaming.
Yeah,
I think it's good people have a choice and it's actually backed. So it's really good that they got the SEC approval on their STO. I mean, that's a great start. It sort of creates credibility and that there's overview and that they assigned for, permit on it. It's great news. I think we've done a great job on talking on DeFi. I already can give a little bit away that we're going to do a next report on DeFi, as we call it, or decentralized finance. It's going to be a major topic during the coming year because there's going to be so much development in that area, coping with all the changes in the market. So I want to thank you both and, see you next week, guys.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Blockchain DNA podcast. Make sure to visit our website and follow us on social media at DNA by Metaverse or at MVS DNA. Till next time. Till next time. Till next time.